You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm Pete LaBarbera with the Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, which is we're a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist movement. I'm here with John Kirkwood, president of Grace Gospel. President. Well, you're not president. You're pastor.
Pastor.
Are you pastor and president?
Yeah, no. We have a president, but I'm not him.
Anyways, we're in Bensonville, Illinois, right outside, actually, O'Hare Airport. We're close to that, if you want to know where we broadcast from. But we've switched, and we are now doing a podcast. We hope one day to do even more podcasts than one a week. So we're not on the air at WYLL anymore, but actually we're doing the same exact thing. And we're very happy to have our friend Peter Sprague from Family Research Council. Peter is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at Family Research Council, which is pretty much the leading pro-family organization fighting the homosexual agenda on Capitol Hill. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, thanks for coming back, and we hope to have you for a total of three interviews. And Peter's done tremendous work analyzing and confronting the homosexual agenda. He's done many, many media interviews, including lots of TV interviews, which is not an easy thing because these days the culture of media is pretty much against us. And they assume, as we're going to show you very quickly here in clips, they pretty much assume now the civil rights argument. They're basically saying that homosexuality is a civil rights issue. The so-called gay rights movement is the heir to the noble black civil rights movement. And even though most blacks disagree with that, most journalists just continue to assert otherwise. Correct, Peter?
Yeah, I think they've pretty much sold out to this mindset, this paradigm of the, born gay can't change, therefore being gay is like being black, mentality.
And then part of that is not wanting to have on, very rarely do they have on people who've left the homosexual lifestyle. And I saw recently where our homosexual fanatic friend Wayne Besson was furious that Dr. Drew actually had on Janet Boines, who's a former lesbian. And of course, I didn't see that program, but they hurled all sorts of criticism at him. Why would he? I think they called her an ex-gay fraud. So it's all about suppression, isn't it, Peter? In terms of it's almost like they're afraid of debate because they just want to suppress opposing arguments. Just basically saying all of them are not valid.
Yes, I mean, and that's why my latest pamphlet that I wrote for FRC is called "Debating Homosexuality," because instead of being in a position where we were just accused of being where homosexual activists would debate us and say we were wrong, now we're in a position where they say, and some quite explicitly, there is no debate. And they're quite explicitly trying to shut down debate, have people who oppose homosexuality essentially blacklisted from appearing on the media. And it's regardless of what you think about homosexuality, this is kind of shocking in a democracy, in a democracy where we value free speech and the interplay of ideas and, the marketplace of ideas.
But, Peter, they're only able to do that. They're only even to try this argument because the media is has adopted a role. Pretty much they are now part of the homosexual movement. They've adopted a complete cheerleader role. And, John, let's play those clips. This is introduce these two clips we have. Are they both Soledad O'Brien from CNN?
Oh, believe it or not, yeah. But I think she's in a duel with Piers Morgan to see who could actually be the most pro-homosexual advocate and most anti-Christian advocate on CNN. But we have her interviewing the first black president of the Southern Baptist Convention, Fred Luter Jr., Pastor Fred Luter Jr., and you'll see they're kind of stunned that he just doesn't get in line with President Obama's view on gay marriage.
Will your agenda include inclusiveness of gay Americans, a new civil rights issue?
Well, no. I'm a man of the book. I believe in the Word of God. I believe in the Bible. And God has specifically spoken about marriage. I mean, marriage is between a man and a woman. That's biblical. No president, whether it's a president in the White House, no governor, no mayor, no one can change that. God has already established a marriage between one man and one woman. So I will stand for that because that's what the Word of God says, and that's what I believe in. We want to love. All of us as believers. All of us love everybody, including those in the gay community. We're going to embrace them as far as who they are, but we're also going to stand on biblical principles that the Word of God has already established, that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Which puts you directly, sir, in opposition to President Obama.
On this particular subject, yes, I support my president. He is my president. I pray for him and Michelle and his daughters on a daily basis. But on this issue, the president and I have two different opinions, for sure.
Well, note how she says, she just outright calls the homosexual, says, does that agenda include gay Americans, a new civil rights issue? So now it's just a fact, right, Peter?
Well, that's the way they present it. But I would just note that it was just in the news today that I believe it was yesterday at the Southern Baptist Convention, the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention, which Pastor Luter is now the president of, they passed a resolution explicitly saying that the homosexual rights movement is not a civil rights movement, that we reject that belief, and that was passed nearly unanimously by the largest Protestant denomination in the United States.
And while so many other religious denominations are moving the other way, it's refreshing to see that there's a stand that they're taking there.
Yes. The denominations that are moving the other way are also losing membership at a rapid clip.
So, yes.
But such as the Episcopal Church and so forth. But yes, the Southern Baptist Convention has stood up on this issue, and it doesn't matter whether you're white or black. As Pastor Luter said, this is an issue of principle.
John, what's the second clip we got?
The second clip is our favorite girl again, Soledad O'Brien. And this time, this is a little bit dated. This is right after the president announced his evolving on the same-sex marriage issue. And she's talking with another black pastor. And I wanted to point this out because Tony Evans stands strong to his biblical faith here. And again, Soledad is quite shocked.
Well, I was disappointed. As a Christian and as a person who believes that the Bible has established clearly what marriage is supposed to be between a man and a woman, and because the reality is that the saga of a nation is really the saga of its families written large. And when you redefine the family other than what the Creator intended when He established it, then you're looking at the devolution of civilization. And so I was disappointed, and I hope that just as he changed it one way, there will be influences to have him reconsider and change it back the other way. Because as a Christian, the Bible should establish our authority, not the culture or popular opinion.
As the leader of the nation, the law should establish the authority, correct? And certainly civil rights was fought on equal opportunity and equal rights under the law. It sounds like you'd be contradicting that.
And separation of church and state.
Well, separation of church and state should never mean separation of God and right. And since government is supposed to be an agency of God, and since the nation was established based on a theistic frame of reference, God should not be marginalized and put on the sideline. His authority should not be negated, and we should not take human institutions that He established, which includes government, and the foundation is the family, and redefine it at our own whim. Civil rights is not an issue here. Biblical justice is the equitable application of God's moral law in society. When you talk about racial civil rights and combine that to the redefinition of the family, God has to have a say-so on both issues.
He's spoken on both issues clearly. Far be it for me to ever argue with a pastor about God, so I'll just preface this, what I'm about to say to you, sir. But why not leave it up to God, right? At the end of the day, you could sort of leave it all up to God, and you could say, under the laws of the country, we aim for equal protection and equal rights under the law. For example, I would say, you know, the institution of marriage has changed over time. I mean, I was having this debate with Tony Perkins this morning. The institution has changed a lot over time. For women's rights, certainly, for, as you well know, rights of slaves to get married, as you well know, rights of blacks and whites to get married. So it's changed a lot. Why not leave it up to God and let man get out of it?
Because God has established what man is supposed to do, and he expects man to do it his way, not a way independently of him. And when you do things independently of him, you bear consequences that you don't want to bear. And so God is not just some ethereal spirit up there that is uninvolved. He is involved through his systems that he's established. Government is one of those systems, and government is to respect his rule, not ignore it.
It's amazing how they want to jump on the respect the law thing when they're not respecting the law as far as Dome is concerned. You know.
Yeah, that was exactly the point I was going to make, is that that President Obama is explicitly refusing to enforce the law that is on the books with respect to the Defense of Marriage Act. So that's hardly a defense of the president's position to talk about putting the law first. And, of course, the... you know, so many states have put this in their own state constitutions, their highest law of their state.
Yeah, they don't want to respect those laws, Peter. We're coming up to a break, and I want to get more reaction from you to the amazing interview there with Soledad O'Brien. We're talking to Peter Sprigg, who's Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council. The website there is frc.org. And he's also the author of a book called Outrage, How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy to Redefine Marriage. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking with Peter Sprigg, who is the Senior Fellow of Policy Studies at the Family Research Council. I'm here with my good friend, Pastor John Kirkwood from Grace Gospel Fellowship Church in Bensonville, Illinois. And Peter, let me get more of your reaction. Well, first of all, let me just ask you, as a Washington, D.C. guy, you see this intense media bias. How do you deal with it? When you have somebody like Soledad O'Brien, who's obviously incredibly committed to the homosexual cause, and you're what is supposed to be an impartial journalist asking you questions, how do you deal with that kind of bias?
Well, more and more I am thinking that it's necessary to sort of deconstruct the underlying presuppositions of this mindset, even if you're talking about same-sex marriage, for example, you have to come down and say, okay, remember that sexual orientation is not one thing, it's three things. It deals with attractions, behavior, and self-identification, okay? And we're talking about behavior here, okay? And really bring it back to the focus on behavior, because the whole idea that it's a civil rights issue is based on the idea, well, people don't choose their same-sex attractions, which is, in a sense, true, but they still choose their behavior. So it's kind of a bait and switch. They try to win you over on the civil rights argument because they don't choose same-sex attractions, but then say, oh, well, then you can't ask them to restrain their behavior either, which is not logical. I mean,
and people have their sexual attractions change.
Well,
obviously.
That's right. Yeah, any of them is changeable. Any of those three elements is changeable. The changing the attractions may be the most difficult, but the others can be changed at will. So that's one aspect, is kind of deconstructing it. But then also there's this confusion about the role of religion and the law and so forth. The way I usually describe it to people is, you'll hear this argument. Some people will say a religion is, I mean, some people will say marriage is a religious institution. Other people say marriage is a civil institution. I argue that at its heart, marriage is a natural institution rooted in the order of nature itself. It's because it takes one man and one woman to make a baby that we treat the relationship of one man and one woman as something unique within society, as different from other relationships. And that's true regardless of whether you believe in the Christian religion or some other religion or no religion at all. It doesn't change the biological reality. Now, if we are Christians debating other Christians or people who profess to be Christians, then we can argue about the Bible and so forth and its role. And I certainly don't accept the view of separation of church and state, which says that you cannot bring religious values to bear on public policy issues. But on the other hand, I don't think it's right to say that the only reason people have to oppose same-sex marriage is a theological one. There is a fundamental biological reality which underlies marriage and the sociological reality that children do best when raised by their own married mother and father.
Okay, well, let's turn right there because you're absolutely right. And it seemed, well, before I want to turn to your latest published analysis of the Regner study, which we talked about last week, any more comments on Soledad O'Brien? Obviously, just it seems to me anything it takes to be pro-gay. It didn't even make sense what she was saying, you know, not because we certainly don't see liberals respecting the law, but it's, you know, they understand that they've got to sort of deconstruct Christian religion in its opposition to homosexuality, especially gay marriage. And it just seems that they'll throw anything but the kitchen sink at critics to try to get something to basically make their position seem irrational.
Right. Well, I think she's, you know, she's distorted on the idea of the church and state and so forth. Also, her understanding of the law, though. I mean, I want to ask her, show me the amendment or the passage in the U.S. Constitution that talks about sexual orientation. Where does sexual orientation appear in the Constitution? Where does the right to same-sex marriage appear in the Constitution? Obviously, it doesn't. It appears nowhere in the Constitution.
Well, now, Peter, I think they'd say it's right next to that abortion clause that they found in there.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, they would say that it involves this issue, the equal protection clause, okay? Well, equal protection means, and all of the court decisions say this, that people that are similarly situated must be treated similarly by the law. So the real question, it comes back to a factual question. Are same-sex couples similarly situated with respect to the purposes of the marriage law to opposite-sex couples? Since the purpose of the marriage law is promoting responsible procreation, and that is something that cannot happen naturally with a same-sex relationship, they are clearly not similarly situated, so the equal protection argument does not apply. And as we mentioned before the break, it's really the advocates of same-sex marriage are going against the law because the overwhelming weight of the law is in favor of defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman, and they want to, when necessary, simply ignore that, disobey it, refuse to enforce it, or overturn it.
And it seems, Peter, that it's interesting from a political angle as well. They're seizing on Obama's pandering, you know, rechange, because he was for gay marriage before he was against gay marriage before he was for gay marriage again.
Right.
Because he was, many people don't realize he was explicitly for same-sex marriage on a campaign questionnaire when he was running for state senate in our state. And now he disavowed that. And, of course, we all know this who are following the issue. But, Peter, it's interesting how it's almost like the attitude is, how dare you question the president on this?
Yes.
And we see these – there was even a story I saw where some ridiculous poll claiming that blacks have now changed en masse, you know, switching on gay marriage because the president did. It's almost like, how dare you question our president and what he's decided on this?
Right. And I think particularly among you know, church-going African-Americans, it would be an insult to them to say that they're going to stop listening to God and start listening to Barack Obama instead. So I think there's a very good chance it will cost him. Obviously, he's likely to still win a majority of the African-American vote in November. But if it costs him 5%, 10% of the African-American voters because of his position on this issue, that could make a difference in some states.
But we do have this ongoing inevitability, which the media is just will not stop promoting. Everything with regard to the homosexual agenda is inevitable. Gay marriage is inevitable, and that's why, of course, North Carolina was a huge setback for them. But let's just say they won Maine. Let's say they actually the first ever ballot measure passed for same-sex so-called marriage. Peter, of course, they're going to say, "Well, that's it." It's even though 32 states, voted
right.
against it, they will say that shows that that's where we're going as a society.
Right. I mean, I think for same-sex marriage to be inevitable, they would have to repeal all, 30 state marriage amendments. They would have to, legalize same-sex marriage through the democratic process, not the judicial process. That's not going to happen in my lifetime. And so I think that the inevitability argument is really wishful thinking.
But how do you answer when you have the incessantly with the children, when I'm sure you've been hit with this as I have. Polls show kids, people 18, age 18 to 30, are overwhelmingly for same-sex so-called marriage. How do you deal with that? How do you answer that when they're, again, saying you're on this? I mean, it's all about discouraging us from carrying on the fight.
Right, right. Well, I mean, there are a couple of things that I've said in response to that. One is people become more conservative as they get older. When people get older and get married and have children of their own, they may have a little bit more conservative viewpoint of some of these family issues. They may realize, even though they may have a laissez-faire attitude towards homosexuality, when they're in college, they don't want their child growing up to be homosexual and marrying a person of the same sex. They don't want their child being taught about homosexuality in kindergarten. I think that will change people's views as they get older. And also, there's an interesting factor that some people have pointed out in terms of demographics, which is that conservative religious people tend to have more children than liberal people. And so over time, we may see an evolution, if you will, I'll put that in quotes, an evolution of the population to where we have more conservative generations in the future because the more liberal generations are not reproducing. I think that's an ironic thing. So will they gain some ground in the next 5 years, 10 years? Maybe. But I think looking down the road, a generation, two generations from now, I don't believe they'll be able to hold that. And ultimately, you can't defy reality forever. And the reality is there is something unique and special about the union of a man and a woman. It can make babies. You can't just ignore that forever.
The troubling thing that I've seen that Peter brings up is these polls are taken among evangelical children and kids and teenagers and college age kids. And I think the pulpit is responsible. You said, kids tend to be liberal as they're younger. And the old Winston Churchill, if you're 40 and you're not conservative, you don't have a brain kicks in. But to me, the pulpits are silent on this issue. We heard from two great pastors, but the majority of pulpits, they don't want to be involved in this issue. They've backed off this issue. And I think our children are growing up and becoming more like Carrie Underwood than they are Kirk Cameron.
Well, that is true. I mean, if they haven't heard the truth, they're not going to know the truth if they have never heard the truth. And if all they've ever heard is the other side's propaganda, and with the dominance of the pro-homosexual viewpoint in the news media, in the entertainment media, in higher education, and for the most part in K-12 education now, it will be a challenge for parents and for pastors as well.
Well, it is a challenge, and we're talking with Peter Sprague now. After the break, we want to get into his analysis of the Mark Regner study, which has gay activists just howling in anger. This is the study which shows that surveyed children of parents comparing parents homosexual parents versus straight parents. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools?
Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to Peter Sprigg, who's the author of a book called Outrage, How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy and Redefining Marriage. Peter, you can get that on Amazon or through FRC, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and Peter is very talented and good at what he does. He's a lot of people rely on him for standing for truth, as opposed to the lies that come out of the homosexual lobby in Washington. Peter, you had some time now since our last interview to sit down and analyze this very important study by Mark Regnerus. What stands out now that you've published an analysis? Tell people how to get that as well.
Well, the analysis that I've written is on our website at www.frc.org. It's an issue brief, and let's see if I have it in front of me. I can't remember what the title was.
Oh, I've got the title here. It says new study on homosexual parents tops all previous research. And
right.
you make the point in your analysis that this is now the gold standard for gay parenting studies. Why is that?
Well, there's been somewhat of a standoff, if you will, between pro-family scholars and public policy groups like ours and pro-homosexual scholars over what the parenting research shows. Those of us in the pro-family movement have said research shows children do best when raised by their own married mother and father, and that's true. But the other side says, oh, but most of those studies compared those kids with kids raised by single parents or kids from divorced households and so forth. They weren't comparing them with, you know, these loving homosexual couples, you know. And then they did their own set of studies on kids raised by homosexual parents specifically and said, oh, these don't show any harm for these kids at all. Those studies, though, have had serious methodological problems and problems of bias and so forth, which made them kind of unreliable. But you had this kind of standoff because you didn't have large, statistically sound studies that made a direct one-to-one comparison between kids raised in a married mother-father family and kids raised by homosexual parents. That's what this new study did. They got a large sample of 3,000 respondents who are it's representative of the population, and within that there were enough kids raised by lesbian mothers, over 170 raised by lesbian mothers, over 70 that had homosexual fathers, and those were numbers large enough to get some results with real statistical significance. And The result was that children raised by a married mother and father did better on almost every measure. There were 40 different outcome measures. If you look separately at the children of lesbian mothers and homosexual fathers were listed separately, so that gives you 80 total outcome measures involving homosexual parents. The children of the married mother and father did better on 77 out of 80 measures. Now, not all of those are statistically significant in terms of the math involved, but some of them were very strong statistically. They were the kids with homosexual parents are much more likely to have been in families that received welfare when they were children. They have lower educational attainment. They report experiencing less safety and security in their family of origin. They report more ongoing negative impact from their family of origin. They're more likely to suffer from depression, have been arrested more often, and if they are female, they've had more sexual partners on average, both male and female sexual partners. Those are among the strongest findings statistically in this study.
And then now, and then of course, there's this shocking aspect of the sexual abuse. And you make the point, which Mark Regnerus makes the point, just because you have, and that's a comparison of, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Peter, but 23% of children from lesbian whose parents, had a lesbian parent, 23% had experienced, quote, being touched sexually by a parent or other adult caregiver versus 2% from a normal mother-father household. But, of course, the important thing is, and you stated in your paper, that doesn't mean the lesbians themselves molested the child. Mark Regner speculates that it could mean that the child was molested by her biological father before divorce or something like that. But it's still shocking that essentially there's a large dysfunction gap here between the two sets that he's comparing.
Yes. And again, it does require more investigation to find out exactly the dynamic. Now, one of the criticisms that's been made of this study is that actually in the data set, it does track this data over time. But in this particular paper that's been published so far, it doesn't specify when these different incidents happened in the child's life and so forth. So it's just, you know, if you ever had a mother, if you had a mother who was ever in a same-sex relationship while you were a child, then you're listed as having a lesbian mother. You don't know if that was, you know, the whole time you were growing up, or if it was just for, you know, a one-year period or something like that. One of the things, so that's one of the limitations of the study, and I think we can get to more information once he releases the data set. But another criticism that some people have made is they said, well, this really is about instability, family instability, because most of these kids being identified as having a homosexual parent, they weren't with a parent and the parent's partner for the whole time growing up from birth to age 18. If you compared them, those households would be more stable, more like married household couples. But one thing that you find in the study is there are hardly any of those households exist. I mean, the reason why they aren't broken out separately is because even in a sample of 3,000 people, they couldn't find more than two people who were raised by a lesbian and a mother and the mother's partner from birth to age 18.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let me make sure I understand this, Peter. You're saying so there's hardly anywhere there's been a long-term living with two women who call themselves lesbian partners. There's not many examples of long-term living in those. Wouldn't the homosexual activists come back and say, yeah, but Peter, that's because we don't have the marriage laws on the books, which is helping them stabilize, and that's the fault of the law for not allowing those families to be recognized, therefore to be more stable?
Well, some people have made that argument that that they need same-sex marriage in order to give more stability to their relationships. But I think the analysis I'm working on right now, which I haven't completed yet, I'll probably be writing another paper or at least a blog post, is to answer that, is comparing the children raised by lesbian mothers with the children raised by single parents, so that you're not comparing them to, you know, to these married couple families. Compare them to the ones that everybody agrees are kind of unstable and inadequate because you only have one caregiver and so forth. And what I'm finding is that even with that comparison, the children of lesbian mothers do not do as well as the children raised by single parents.
Okay, but
so
on
the
that
problem
one
is related to sexual orientation. It's not just related to family structure.
Okay, but on that one, that would also be a negation of the findings on the gay side, because they're smaller studies, which the other report criticized. But that's what they always compare. They compared lesbian mothers, say, to divorced single moms.
Right.
But you point out in your paper that there's, and I want you to talk about this other paper by Lauren Marks, which basically critiqued all those studies. And I haven't read that paper, and I was surprised to read in your paper at FRC. This statement that Marx debunks the APA's claim that, quote, This is what the APA, the American Psychological Association, is that what we're talking about here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The American Psychological Association had said that, quote, not a single study has found children of lesbian or gay parents to be disadvantaged in any significant respect relative to children of heterosexual parents, unquote. Lauren Marks, a researcher from Louisiana State University, debunks that, essentially saying that by the APA's own standards, not one of the 59 studies referenced in the 2005 APA brief compares a large random sampling. So Marx is making the point that none of these studies even meet the APA standard. Four of the 59 studies cited by the APA, only four of those met the APA's own standard.
The APA's own standard for statistical power, they call statistical power in a research project. And not one of them involved comparisons of large representative samples to another large representative sample. So this was the APA quote is from a 2005 issue, a brief that they released, and that's been frequently cited by advocates of homosexual parenting. And I think he does a great job of really taking Marx did a great job of really taking those studies apart.
So the Marx thing is almost as important because finally we're getting some feedback from the academic community on how unreliable these studies are. And you're right, those studies are constantly cited. And when you're just a layman and you're talking to some homosexual activist and they say, well, the APA says, you know, that to the untrained mind, that has a lot of influence.
Right. And you're talking about the young people. This is another thing that has occurred to me is that I don't know how old you are, Pete, but I remember back in the 60s and 70s, there was this popular slogan, question authority.
Yes.
You know? And people had that bumper sticker, question authority. Well, the problem is we're getting to the point where the authority is going to be the liberal establishment in education, the liberal establishment of the APA. Those are the authorities. And I think it's time for us to start encouraging today's younger generation to question authority.
Maybe we can resurrect some old hippie songs, and
because the authority of groups like the American Psychological Association, American Psychiatric Association, has been accepted unquestioningly for too long, and their authority it's not something that they deserve, not on this issue.
Well, absolutely, and this is important that the twin reports that came out. One takes on these old studies, and they've been trotted out frequently, and it's nice to see that there's some new evidence coming in that shows that they are more propaganda than actual objective research. We're talking to Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council. He's the author of Outrage, How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy to Redefine Marriage. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to our good friend Peter Sprigg, who's a senior fellow for policy studies at the Family Research Council. Peter is also on the board of PFOX, which is Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. Peter, before you're done with our interviews here, I hope we have some more get to talk about that, because that is a wonderful organization that does so much with so little. So congratulations on your involvement with them, and that's a group that people should be supporting. That's PFOX.org. Peter, again, before we get to Chicago and the gay marriage thing, anything else that you from your paper that jumps out at you from this research?
Just that, and not only with respect to the sexual abuse, but with respect to their sexuality in general, it shows dramatic differences between children raised by homosexual parents. Now, you might logically expect that children raised by homosexual parents with that as their role model would be more likely to become homosexual, but for years the homosexual activists had denied that that's the case.
Right.
However, this study also showed that, for example, at least those raised by lesbian mothers are nearly four times more likely to identify as something other than entirely heterosexual than those raised by a married mother and father.
Are we seeing homosexual activists now basically saying taking a turn and saying, well, that's a good thing, that's okay, who cares?
I mean, well, that's the interesting thing, is that presumably they don't think there's anything wrong with that, so you wouldn't think they would be so defensive about it, but in any case, they have in the past. Hopefully this will set that to rest.
Well, it also throws into question the whole thing, John, you know, the born gay, you know, we're always taught, born gay. I mean, obviously, your environment influences your sexual choices.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to throw this question at you because this is a great study, and we all know how the Kinsey studies influenced the sexual revolution, whatever you want to call it. But my question to the both of you is, how do you think these two studies, Marx and Regnerus, are going to play out on the street? I mean, we do have the jamming committee of the mainstream media and the culture saying, don't pay any attention to this. This is flawed. So how do you think it's going to filter down to where the rubber meets the road?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if the media just continues to report on sort of nitpicking about the limitations of the study and overlooks the massive advance that this study represents in terms of our knowledge and in terms of the quality of the research on this issue, then they may be able to sort of pound down the significance of it, and it may not penetrate to the public. I hope that's not the case. I hope people will understand this is the best information we've ever gotten on this subject. If people don't like it, then let them put the money up and pay for a better study with a larger sample instead of continuing to refer to the old studies that have been discredited by the Marx paper.
For example. And if they're going to analyze this study, will the media analyze the old studies? Will they pick up on Lauren Marx's criticism of the other studies?
Right. I mean, and it was pointed out, Marx points out that how distorted these other studies were in that they dealt with mostly white, upper-class, highly educated lesbian parents. And the Regnerus study shows that that's really not typical of lesbian mothers, who were more likely to have, been on welfare and have lower educational levels and so forth. It's almost completely reversed, not just changed, but reversed the image provided by some of these older studies, which just shows how inadequate their sampling was.
And then you talk in your paper, your analysis of the Regnerus study, about the self-presentation bias, where the parents, a lot of those studies were interviewing the parents who were still raising the kid, and of course they had a tendency to want to make it look like they were doing a good job, and so there was a tremendous bias from that.
Yes. If you ask the parent, you say, we're doing a study of lesbian parents to show that lesbian parents are just as good as any other parents, so come and join our study and tell us how are your children doing under, having a lesbian mom. And the people who join that kind of study are going to say, they're doing great, So it tells us only what the parents think. It doesn't really tell us what's happening in the children's lives. Now, the Regnerus study, for those who don't realize, it's based on interviewing the children after they reach adulthood. It's based on interviews with young adults ages 18 to 39 and asking them about their experience growing up.
Okay, now let's turn on a dime here, Peter, because we only got 5 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about Illinois. You've written a book on marriage. You're an expert from our side on the homosexual marriage issue. As you know, Illinois' Attorney General Lisa Madigan pulled an Obama and essentially said, There's two ACLU and homosexual activist lawsuits, one by Lambda Legal, the main homosexual activist lawyers group, and they have a total of 25 couples, I believe, homosexual couples who are suing to get married. The attorney general said she will not defend Illinois' existing marriage law. It's a law. It's not an amendment, but we have a law in the books defining marriage between a man and a woman. The attorney general, the law enforcer of our state, has decided she's not going to defend that law, and she's actually supporting the homosexual and ACLU lawsuits.
She must not watch Soledad O'Brien.
Yeah, what about the law? I mean, for years, the homosexual activists said that we don't need the constitutional amendments because we have laws on the books. They were using that to fight against amendments. Now they're trying to destroy the actual laws on the books.
Yes, and one thing to understand here is just because you don't agree with the policy expressed by the law is not a good enough reason for an attorney general to refuse to defend the law against a constitutional challenge. There are a lot of laws that may be bad policy, but that aren't unconstitutional. And the way you change bad laws that aren't unconstitutional is through the democratic process. You get the legislature to repeal those laws. If they don't do that, then you go to the political process. You elect legislators who will do that, okay? We have a process for changing the law. And this is what's so shocking, is that all of that is being bypassed here. And it really shows a sort of, unfortunately, the totalitarian tendencies of this movement, where they think because we're right, mm-hmm. we don't have to abide by the law because we know we're right.
Right.
And that's terrifying for that to be the attitude. And
but is this all flowing from Obama, or is this just the way the Democratic Party is headed? Because you have the Attorney General saying they just opine that it's unconstitutional. We don't believe this is constitutional, and so then they don't enforce the law.
Well, I think it's I think with respect to the homosexual movement, it's very becoming more common because they realize they can make these arguments and have them accepted by some of the other elites, like judges, even though and they feel frustration that they haven't had more success in the political realm, because, like you said, you know, not one state have they ever been able to establish same-sex marriage through a referendum. So they have this frustration, and they're just trying to bypass it. But the Attorney General has an obligation to defend laws, the constitutionality of laws, not the wisdom of all laws. And I'm not an expert in the Illinois Constitution for sure, but I don't think you can find a passage in there that says that a man has a right to marry a man and a woman has a right to marry a woman.
Peter, talk about the incremental approach. We got a minute left. The incremental approach of homosexual activists saying what they need to say at any given time, but it's always ends justifies the means to get to a higher goal. And here, so now they're trying to destroy the Illinois law, which they at one time said was the reason why there shouldn't be an amendment.
Right. Well, that's true. The arguments will change as the landscape changes in an effort to get what they ultimately want. If I can slightly change the subject, I just was doing research on another issue, this blood donation ban for men who have had sex with men, and they're still trying to get that changed. And so there's a proposal first to reduce it from a lifetime deferral to a 5-year deferral. Then some people say, no, it shouldn't be 5 years, it should only be 1 year. And then other people say, no, it shouldn't be 1 year, it should be 6 months. And then I see the gay men's health crisis says, oh, no, it shouldn't be abstinence-based at all. If you're in a monogamous relationship, you should be able to give blood. And then they say, oh, well, if you are consistent in using condoms, even if you're not monogamous, you should be able to give blood. So there's this constant slippery slope, and the ultimate effect is to hurt the safety.
We'll have to end it there, Peter, but we're going to pick up with you next week. Yes, it's always whatever serves the gay activists at any given time. We'll be back with Peter Sprigg next week from the Family Research Council. Peter, thanks so much.
Thank you.
God bless.